What is going on, comic fam? It's your boy, the Bearded Comic Bro, and I am joined by comic creator Charlie Stickney. Welcome back to the show.
I am really glad to be here. We were talking a little bit off channel. Like, it's been approximately, 100 episodes since I've been here?
Yeah, you were the second episode of interviews I've ever done for creator interviews. I had Rylan Grant on, and then Rylan was like, you've got to talk to Charlie. And you were my second interview, and now... But at the time of this recording, you're my 102nd interview.
Well, I have to say, starting out with Ryland and then having me, I mean, you peaked early.
Yeah.
But we can probably bring you back up. Maybe you can get Ryland on after me.
And yeah, I mean, we had a steady stream where Ryland was producing a comic every week. And so he's constantly on the show. So
Ryland and Cullen Bunn, right?
I mean, yeah. I mean, they were the two hardest working men in comics. So I'm excited to talk to you though again. Now that it is, so much time has since our last interview, I'm not going to be as nervous now, and we're just going to have a fun conversation.
Well, if it makes you feel better, I could be really nervous. If you want to do a little role reversal, yeah, it's like, okay.
All right, we can do this.
What's your next question?
All right.
That's right.
Yeah, right. You are the master of comics and indie comics and interviews. You're all over YouTube. So, but if nobody is familiar with you, for whatever reason, they're watching this or listening on the podcast and they don't know who you are, Charlie, give people a little bit of just kind of background of you and, your comics that you're working on and things.
Sure. I'm a creator who has had a great love of comics for a long time. For a brief period of time, and by brief, I mean like 15 to 20 years, I worked in the entertainment industry in both film and animation and things like that. But it was all in a long end around attempt to get back into comics. So after playing around making movies and making cartoons, around 2016, I had a passion project I wanted to do, and it was called White Ash. And at the time, I had been working professionally as a writer for a long time, and I had a lot of contacts, and I wanted to try to find the best home for it. And for someone coming new to comics at that time, for me, based on the research I had done, it seemed like the best place was Kickstarter. Yes. So I started this book, White Ash, which the quick pitch is Romeo and Juliet meets Lord of the Rings in rural Pennsylvania. Or imagine the guys from Supernatural got stuck in Riverdale, but rather than battling demons from hell, to deal with the worst of Mordor. It's grounded fantasy in coal mining country. And it kind of took off on Kickstarter. And that led me to becoming a bigger and bigger part of the indie comics universe. Eventually, I moved over to Scout, and Scout started putting White Ash out in comic book shops, along with its spinoff Clarion. And from there, I actually became part of Scout, took over as co-publisher of Scout, and was there for about 2.5 years serving that purpose. But it reached a point where I just had too many stories I wanted to tell, and I didn't feel like it was fair for creators if I was going to be that person who was both writing their own work and trying to promote theirs. So it was kind of time for me to sort of reinvest and figure out what I wanted to do. So I stepped away, and I've gone back to crowdfunding, which was my first home and the home I love, because you were able to communicate directly with fans there in a way that's a little bit harder in the direct market, where there's all these different middlemen. And they're wonderful middlemen. I mean, don't get me wrong, but it's not the same kind of direct connection that you as a creator have with your fan base. And we're one of the top 10 brands on Kickstarter. And if you're talking single issue comics, the last Glarian was one of the two or three most backed Kickstarters of all time in the single issue comic space. So if you like good fantasy that's grounded, that's a little sexy at times, that's what we do. And we try to make the best content that you can find on Kickstarter or anywhere else.
It's so true. What's funny is you're talking, like, I've, obviously we follow each other on social, so I've been following your journey. And I feel like when I had you on, you were at the start of like becoming involved with Scout. They had just picked up the books and you were in publishing. And now it's like, now I've had you on, and like, you've gone through a whole metamorphosis through the 2 years since we've talked last. So it's just been a lot of fun. But what I love is you have such a good insight into comics. And, when I brought you on that first time, we talked a lot about, why was Kickstarter your home? And then we're in the midst of this interview now, you got another Kickstarter going on with Glarian. And I want to talk about that, and you kind of mentioned it a little bit about Kickstarter. You have a little bit of connection with the fans. What is it about Kickstarter that just draws you into, like, this is your sweet spot when it comes to creating comics?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. First of all, it's hard as a creator to find an audience, right? And I think that's the biggest thing that you as a, like, you want to create good stories, but if no one finds your stories, then, you know, it's the tree falling in the forest that no one's heard, right? And so such an important part of your content creation is getting your stories to the right people. And I think what creators need to understand, especially younger creators right now, is in the direct market, there's kind of content that plays really well there, and there's content that plays really well on Kickstarter. And sometimes they're not the same thing. Sometimes, you know, you can have something like Saga probably would have done okay on Kickstarter. There's a chance that people would have bought it in other places. But you know, I think, especially now with the economics of comics and comic book shops, some of them are having, you know, a hard time. So they're going back to the bread and butter stuff that they know they can sell, that they have people who will buy. And what that means, it's IP. It means it's big two titles. And it means creator owned from people who have big enough names to move copies. What that also means is if you're a creator and this is your first book, your second book, or maybe even like your fifth book, you're going to have a really hard time making money off a deal in the direct market where it's a profit split deal. And that's how a lot of the smaller companies work, where they don't pay a page rate. Or if they pay you a page rate, and usually that, if you're a writer, it's a negligible page rate, because there's supposedly royalties built in, there's a very small chance you're going to get royalties. Yes. So either way, you're kind of giving up a lot of rights for probably little in terms of return. And when it comes to the stores, it's the shopkeepers who decide, you know, what's on the shelf. And every store has, you know, a different kind of vibe. And when you look at a company like Scout or even Vault, maybe even Boom, the number of stores that support those, and maybe I would take Boom out of that, but just like the next tier down, like all the other publishers, there might be 300 stores out of the 2,000 that might be out there that account for 75 to 80% of the sales, right? And, you know, because that's what their fan base is. So, so there's all these stores that aren't even going to pick up a title by Vault, by Scout, by AWA, just because that's not what they carry.
Right.
They carry Marvel, they carry DC, they carry Hellboy. They don't carry all Dark Horse. You know, it's like they carry Hellboy, they carry the IP.
Right. They got Gargoyles, they got the Darkwing Ducks now that are coming out with Dark Horse.
That's it.
I mean, it's so true. I go to a shop. I got back into comics because of an LCS opened up 10 minutes from my house. And they are Marvel, DC, probably 50% image titles that are released, and maybe like 30% of Boom. But then if they have Scout, AWA, Ahoy Comics, you know, Vault Comics, there's like two of us, me and another who's a creator, who we pick up those indie titles because we love. And he watches my content and be like, all right, I like this. I'm going to make this. I'm going to put this up. And, you know, so like he's got Black Cotton. He's got, you know, from Ahoy, the Wrong Place, The Wrong Earth, or, you know, Crimson Cage and something like that he got from AWA. But he's very selective of what it is, because they just sit there if people don't know the titles.
Yeah. And so it's hard to find your fan base because you're also not your own advocate, right? You have to count on the publisher putting out information that's digestible by the store owners, who are then trying to be the pitch people, the spokespeople for your book to try to get people. And if they haven't gotten something that's a good pitch, you know, now they're trying, like, it's a lot harder for the, you know, the store owner to pitch bearded comics bros, mustache fighter number one, than it is the new Brian K. Vaughan book, right?
Right.
Like, one, they're like, here's a sign, it's Brian K. Vaughan's new book. The other one, it's like, I am talking to Michael, who's a regular in the store, and I need to tell you, Michael, you need to check this out. Well, why don't I want to check it out? I don't know who this guy is. Well, right. Let me tell you why. Like so it's an entire different level of engagement that the store owner has to do. And let's face it, you know, they are already overloaded. So for their ability to hand sell 200 different titles, it just doesn't happen.
Right.
So on Kickstarter, it's the creator taking that role back, and you're able to be your own pitch person. You can try to, you know, excite a fan base. And when your fan base shows up at Kickstarter or, you know, any of the other crowdfunding starts, we'll use Kickstarter as the, you know, as the Xerox of crowdfunding, right?
Yeah.
Like, so when your fan base shows up, people say, oh, people are back in this book. What is it? And so like for me, whenever I bring something to Kickstarter, I'm very lucky. I have a huge fan base by Kickstarter standards, not huge by direct market standards, but it's enough that I know I can count on anywhere from 1,000 to 1,500 people showing up to back my books, which is an amazing place to be on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And when I do that, it creates a halo effect, almost like a magnet pulling in new readers because they want to know what this thing all these people are trying to get that they've never heard of before. Mm. So it becomes a wonderful place for you to build your brand. And it also becomes a great place for you to, you know, connect directly with people who will enjoy your work.
Yeah.
On the flip side, it's more work for you, right? You have to become a micro publisher yourself. You're figuring out working with artists, making sure you hit deadlines. You have to negotiate with printers. You have to figure out fulfillment. Are you doing that yourself? Are you outsourcing it? And so all these different components now fall upon you, and you have to make that work. So it is more work. But the reward, both financially and for me emotionally, and the connection that I create, it's a different level. That's not to say I don't want my books out in the direct market. And it's nice to have distribution deals where you can then take them and put them out afterwards. But for now, you know, I'm getting a lot out of just being and having that connection with people.
Yeah. Well, you know, it makes sense because I know last time we talked about you had White Ash was on Kickstarter and then it was getting produced with Scout, you know, later on. And it was kind of like Scout was almost another hand that was helping you like widen your audience because you were already funded the books, obviously, and you had your audience in Kickstarter. And so it was just like anything you got from the direct market that Scout was having those in, it seemed like, you know, the cherry on top for you.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, I mean, kind of the way, if you think about the way films are sometimes funded, sometimes one or two different production companies will get together and they're like, okay, we're going to handle the domestic distribution. The other one's like, we get the money from the foreign distribution. So we'll put in $100 million, we'll put in $100 million, and we'll, you know, we'll split the pie that way. And so I think for creators, especially now, you need to think coming to this, especially if you're not a big name, what are the different revenue streams that I'm looking to bring in for my comic? Is it a Substack? Is it a Patreon? Is it, I don't know, a YouTube stream where you're dropping little bits? Is it a web comic? Is it some kind of sales in Global Comics or, you know, whatever the other digital site is? How are you monetizing and building an audience? And then that direct market piece can be someplace else. It doesn't have to be. And I think that's the thing that I would, you know, try to make clear to a lot of creators. For some of them, the end all and being all is being in that previews catalog, right? Yeah. It's being on the stand of their LCS. But like, if you're pushing for that, sometimes you're willing to sign really bad deals. Don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, your work is worth more than that. And the fact that it was in a comic shop, I don't know if it's worth signing away all the rights to your book and getting next to no money in return, because that's what a lot of people end up doing.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense from that aspect as a creator, because, you know, I've been in the comic YouTube game, you know, for a couple of years now. So I've gotten to the pleasure of getting to know a lot of creators on Twitter and, you know, Instagram and stuff like that. And you see that a lot of, it's almost this, I've made it when you see it, the book in the previews, compared to like where they've had some great success in Kickstarters before, but it almost is like people don't vouch like, oh, cool, you're making a comic and it's on a Kickstarter, but it's like now there's almost they sense a more validation it's interesting because it seems like it doesn't necessarily correlate with then like your sales are going to be more than your sales were with Kickstarter.
Right. Like I will generally make more on Kickstarter than most for like, say this Glarian that's right now, which is a collection of like 8 short Glarian stories in a hardcover. The profit on that will probably be more than most indie creators make from 2 or 3 series in the direct market. That said, I'm on the high end of what Kickstarter does. There are, you know, like Lady Death. I mean, that guy's making $500,000 per Kickstarter campaign, and probably 350,000 of that's profit, right?
Yeah.
You know, and then if you look at the numbers in the direct market for even, you know, for say a new book coming out from Boom, you know, number one might do 15,000-20,000 copies, but then you're looking at like 10,000 for number two by number and like 20,000 copies in the direct market for a creator for a royalty, that might be $10,000, maybe. Yeah. Right. And so, you know, then it's like 5,000, then it's 3, and then all of a sudden they've made 20,000 on, and this is like a Boom book that's successful.
It's like a popular, like a highly popular book. Yeah.
Right. Right. Like versus, you know, Source Point Press or even AWA or Scout or Vault. Like those books, in terms of the royalties that are coming back to the creators on a mini series, you'd be lucky to make $6,000 or $7,000.
Yeah.
And like, if you're having to pay for creation, and sometimes like if you're at a place that's a profit split publisher and there are ones there, you have to cover your own costs. So a lot of creators go into debt. They lose, you know, they sign away a good portion of the rights to a publisher, and the return they get back covers maybe 10% of what they spent to make the book. And so for me, you have to do those different revenue streams. And if you're not doing that, unless, again, you're Mark Millar, Brian K. Vaughan, Scott Snyder, the deals that you're gonna get are very predatory, and the return that you're going to get from the direct market is going to be very small.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because I've had some, you know, I've had some creators who do a lot of work with DC or the Marvel, you know, the big two that have been on the show, and they've also talked about how, like, they utilize the smaller distributors, publishers more as, you know, I'm going to get to tell my story that I want that I might not be able to tell in this market because a smaller publisher is going to be like, oh, we have so-and-so or such-and-such on our book. Yeah, sure. You can write a story, whatever, that might not get past the Image or, you know, or something. So it's interesting to see how the market, you know, and the comic industry works for them.
Sure. And like that said, some people make more on Kickstarter than people do at their page rates at the big two.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that I pay some of my artists really well, and I'm like, hey, what's your rate? And these are people who have done stories for DC, for Marvel, you know, the colorists, illustrators, they tell me, and they're like, well, I can probably, I'm like, no, that's your rate. I can pay it because I make enough revenue on Kickstarter to be able to do that. And so for me, it's important. And I think it shows that it's a viable distribution model and also a revenue source.
Yep. And gang, if for whatever reason you're watching or listening, you're like, I don't believe it. Like, just pull the back of one of these Kickstarter books and look at Charlie's backers. How much do you hate the backers that have you basically take up 2 lines where they say like their name, Bearded Comic Bro, their last name? So it's.
Well, I will say at one point, I went from doing the print in the book to just doing it in a PDF form.
Yeah.
so like with those digital pages, I'm willing to put in as many as people want. But it was, I mean, it's a wonderful problem to have.
Yeah.
Like as problems go, to have too many backers to fit in your Kickstarter campaign, you know, the back of your book to print. Yeah. I'm not going to complain about that. You know,
right.
It's like, I also don't complain about how long fulfillment takes me. Because there's too many packages to ship. I mean, like, you know, things that I should not be complaining about.
So how, I guess if someone's, you know, looking at trying to get into Kickstarter or, you know, is in the midst of Kickstarter here right now, it's kind of like your main bag. As someone who's been doing it now for a couple years backing Kickstarters and stuff, I've started to see from my end, or at least I've been more aware of, more Kickstarters not being able to be funded, or, you know, or they're funded, but they're, you know, they're not being able to be fulfilled down the road. And, you know, I'm seeing on social media stuff popping up. how do you balance the negative side of the press with Kickstarter for send someone like you, who like you live off of putting stuff out on Kickstarter? Does that make sense?
I mean, yeah, I think when it comes to social media, you have to take everything with a grain of salt, right? Yeah. It's what the algorithm's showing you.
Right.
I mean, I know what the statistics are in Kickstarter. I know that right now comics are one of the highest to fund categories. I think it's 78% of the time comics are funding. Yeah. They're raising astronomical sums every year. You know, so it's an expanding and growing marketplace. Mm-hmm. And so knowing that, when I see people tweeting about, oh, this anthology didn't fulfill, or, you know, it's the negative things that get people's attention.
Right.
You know, versus all the successes that are happening on a weekly and a daily basis on Kickstarter. I mean, do you see a lot of press about Terry Moore, you know, breaking $100,000 on the first time he's ever been on the platform? You know, like that, like obviously there's a creator with a long history and fan base, but I know from, you know, behind the scenes that he was a little nervous. Am I going to fund? Yeah. Am I going to hit like his $25,000 or $30,000 goal? And he goes and hits $100,000 on day one. Right. So, you know, like that for me is the kind of things that I think people should focus on. And, it doesn't like, there are plenty of comics that never came out in the direct market. Right, they see things advertised. Look at the Batgirl movie. That movie was made, right, and is never going to be released, right? So I think you can find all these negative things, but there's thousands of movies released every year that went through all of those things. And same thing with comic books. There are, you know, I mean, at any given time, there's anywhere from like 180 to about 320 ish projects that are currently live on Kickstarter. Yeah. And, you know, if 78% of those are going to fulfill, you know, that means like 150 to 300 new comic books are going to be funded every month. And if it was a significant portion of, say, 250 comic books that weren't being fulfilled, it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
So it's happening. People, like, when you look at Kickstarter now, the big shift that's happened in the last 3 years, maybe 5 years, is when I came in, it was all anthologies. It was graphic novels, and there were a very few people who were trying to do serialized comics on Kickstarter, because that was just seen as a crazy endeavor. Kickstarter was a one and done. You know, people came to Kickstarter to fulfill that project, that dream. What am I going to Kickstart? And now it's become a place where people go to publish, right? And so it's a serialized format, and that's what you see. I mean, there's also a whole game with variant covers that's crazy on Kickstarter. Now, I've dipped into that a little bit, but for me, it's about the stories. So I am looking to build audience. I mean, like the hardcover that I have right now, that's on Kickstarter. I had an early bird price of $25 for one of the covers. And I think the early bird price for the more expensive cover was $30.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's going to be $100, maybe a little bit more, depending on stretch goals, page oversized hardcover that you're getting for $25. And so when people talk about Kickstarter pricing, you look at something like this, which is actually like, you wouldn't get that in the direct market, or it would be comparable, right? And so I'm pricing to build backers, to build a fan base, because I want to build something that's sustainable and, you know, show people that great comics are being made there, and that it's a place where you can go and find, you know, your next favorite book. That's, I would say, like, if you're looking for superhero books, they're on Kickstarter, but probably the best version of those is in the direct market, right? Where they figured out how to do that and have been doing that for 90 years. Versus Kickstarter, where you can find so much more fantasy and sci-fi and horror. So if you're looking for other genres, even romance or thrillers, like, there's everything, because it's where creators go to create the product they always wanted to write.
Which, it makes sense, because, you know, I hear it all the time, like, oh, there's too much superhero books and comics. But if you look at Kickstarter, like, you've got White Ash. I think I've got like Razorblade, a horror, you know, thing that I got. Yeah, like, or there's one from Jeremy Hahn that you know, anthology. Like, there's so many different, or crime books that, you know, because that's Ryland does, you know, and things like that. That there's so such a wide variety out there. I guess,
well, and it's also a great place for LGBTQ books.
Yes, yes.
Or POC books, because they can find a community there, and they can rally a community to go support something and produce it in a way they might find harder to do in the direct market. Well, while there are stores there, there might not be enough stores that will order that book to try to actually print it or publish it. And so that makes it harder for the publisher to take that on. But if the person's already like done it on Kickstarter, then you can sometimes do a larger print run and take some of that print run to the direct market. So like it's just, for me, it's the best thing that's happened for independent comics since the original Image Revolution.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the most game changing thing since then.
Yeah. If someone's trying to get into Kickstarter, because like you said, there's been a shift from anthologies or graphic novels to single issues. How would you recommend that to somebody? Because, you know, I see it sometimes where people go, it's harder for me to support a Kickstarter when I'm paying $15 for a single issue, like where I'm not going to do that in a direct market. Like, so how, as someone who's new trying to figure out like pricing wise or where they fit in, what would your advice be as someone who's been in the Kickstarter game for as long as you?
So two things. I would start with the pricing argument, which is also always crazy because people are like, I'm not going to spend $15 for a 22-page book. And then like Marvel releases a variant that has 7,000 copies, like only 7,000 copies. I'm going to spend $20 for that 20-page book. Where on Kickstarter, it's, 1,500 copies and you're bulking at a $15 price point. So like you have to think about, print run. You have to think about it being an artisanal comic.
Right.
Like when you go to a craft brewery, you're already expecting to pay more for that beer versus then if you go to the store and grab a six pack, right? Like, yeah. And that's just something that people want. So it's, you have to look at that from the consumer point of view. The other thing that I think people is like, I'm not going to order it now and, wait 3 months for it or 4 months for it. And they're like, but don't you do that at the direct market? Don't you go into your shop and say, oh, put this one on pull for me that's coming out in 3 months that I saw in the catalog. Right. And so it's the same thing. It's just a different, like when you're doing it through the direct market, you're trusting that the publisher, that Diamond, that the store, and then the creators are going to deliver it. So there's all these different points of failure versus when you're just talking to the creator. So I think like if you put those arguments aside, it's like that's what I would say to someone who's balking about like backing something. Now, in terms of the creator who's looking to get into Kickstarter, the thing to remember about it is it's a community. And I think in general, indie comics is a welcoming place. Or at least it has been for me. Obviously that's not a universal experience, but it's one of those things that people do for love more than money. So if they see that in someone else, they want to help them. They want to help them navigate that space. So I would say if you're looking to get into as a creator into Kickstarter, you need to start backing Kickstarters. You need to find the kind of content that you like, follow those creators on socials. I'm always putting out Kickstarter advice, which gives you, little places where you can figure out how to begin, and I'm happy to answer questions. Then there's a great sites like Comics Launch. Like that's a podcast, which is almost 300 episodes, maybe it's more, that's just devoted to how to do crowdfunding. And it's like a free resource that you can just sit there for 300 hours and go through and figure out, different bits. So like there's that, there's some books on it, but become part of the community. Get to know get to know creators online and people will band together and help you.
And I love what you say about the community, because I have found the indie community, comic community has been so welcoming to me, as someone who, I report, I guess, on indie comics and stuff like that. But it's interesting of, I love what you say about backing other creators and things like that. Cause people aren't dumb, right? They can sniff out, like, if you're only there to be like, I want to friend you, so then I can promote. We're all promoting our own stuff. You're promoting your book. I'm promoting my channel. So I'm trying to bring people on that are going to help grow my channel. And you're trying to help grow your book. That's obvious. Those parts are obviously there. But I mean, there are times where I'll get messages from indie creators like, hey, I've been loving your stuff. I really like your things. Would you check out my book? I'm like, you just started following me on stuff literally a minute before you sent that. Like,
this is, hey, dear Fortress of Comics, I really like your show. Will you check out my book?
Right? So like, so I say that from the aspect of, yes, indie comics are welcoming, but they also can sniff out if you're genuine. And I think that's the importance of parts of backing other people because you love it. And I think those, the support, you know, is going to come naturally through that.
Well, and like, I think it's true because you can also just look at people's profile. Yeah. At this point, I've backed well over 700 projects on Kickstarter, right? So you can see my commitment to the community that I pay for with, you know, with hard earned money that I get from Kickstarter, I put back into the community because I want other people to succeed. And I know not everyone has the same kind of success that I do on Kickstarter. Yeah. And I have, it's just like social media. I have followers on Kickstarter. So when I back a project, a signal goes out, hey, Charlie Stickney just backed a project, to like 700 people or something. And so that's advertising for that creator. Mm. So I back to give money, but also to spread the word, that this project is live.
Yeah. I just looked at my Kickstarter backing. I thought I backed a lot. I'm like 53. I'm not at those levels.
But I also live there, right? And, and you support, like, you supported 53 creators, and that's wonderful. And you go to the store and you support more creators on a weekly basis, I'm sure.
Yeah. Good thing my wife doesn't watch this show, so she doesn't know how much creators I'm supporting.
Doesn't she sometimes do the show with you?
Yeah, she only watches it if she's on it. So that's how I changed.
Right.
Wait a second. What is this? No, I'm not. So speaking of Kickstarter, I mean, we've talked almost this whole time without talking really about your book, which I fell in love with, White Ash, of, you know, that kind of universe you created. And now the Kickstarter that you have currently going on, the time this interview drops, is your Glarian Kickstarter. Like, you talked about the White Ash world a little bit. What is this spinoff that you've now created, you know, kind of prequel stuff, that in this Kickstarter that you're in the midst of?
Well, so Glarian, I like to say she's the most dangerous elf in the White Ash universe. It's a little bit of Red Sonja. It's a little bit of Conan. She's a little bit of Wolverine. You know, she has that, she is that unstoppable force. And this Kickstarter is for a hardcover collection of 8 short stories that follow her over the course of 3,000 years as she goes from a very young, brash warrior who's all about herself. So, you know, it's like kind of that journey that we all go through as we start, you know, becoming more introspective and thinking about how our actions affect other people. And, you know, and so she's going through all those different stages of life in these different short stories. It is, I would say for your audience, it is, an adult Kickstarter. And by that, I mean, it's more in the Game of Thrones vein. You know, it's not quite Saga. So you can like gauge your expectations there. You know, and it's all in the confines of the story, because part of the story is about, you know, that brashness that we have of youth when we're sowing our wild oats, when we're driven by anger and sex and, you know, like those are the things, and trying to prove yourself and, you know, like that you're the, you know, the strongest, the smartest, the sexiest, like all those things to make yourself an attractive to the world. And then how that turns into, you know, hopefully confidence. Yeah. Where you don't need to show all those things as you get older. And then you can understand who you are and then how you can fit in, you know, your life to other people as you age. But the thing about Glarian is the White Ash universe is this big story that I have mapped out. And there's a huge portion that takes place before they got to White Ash. Before there were, you know, elves and dwarves in Pennsylvania, before like that kind of stuff started happening, the question of how they got there will have reverberations later on. And Glarian is my lens that I'm using to sort of start telling those stories. So while this is a standalone, it's also giving you pieces of information that will later pay off in White Ash. So it's a standalone, but it's also a piece of backstory that I think that the White Ash fans, as the saga goes on, will see how all these pieces played out. Yeah. You know, and not just, you know, for your readers, like the love story between Thane and Glarian is a huge portion of the White Ash mythos. that we haven't really gotten into yet in the modern narrative, because that all happened in the past. But so much of that spurred the how they got there,
yeah,
the why they're there, and you know where they're going in the future.
Well, it's so funny because I remember when I hopped into White Ash, I think you were at issue 4 or whatever. So I kind of was playing catch up. And so then I've been following through with all the Kickstarter since. Glenn came out that first one. You're like, one of them, she's like in a bar, you know, like a dope bar fight. And like someone that helps her out is like this little dude who's just like, his name's Stain. I'm like, no. I was just like, that's a dude for me. I was like, yeah, let's go.
Yeah. So so for me, it's the wonderful thing is when you plot all those things out.
Yeah,
you can either add Easter eggs or you can add real information that you will plan to pay off later on. And as someone who's doing things on Kickstarter, I don't have a publisher who's telling me, nope, cut, the numbers drop below X, so we're not doing any more of that. And we own the rights, so sorry, right? So this is my story to tell as long as I want to tell it. So I have the ability to, you know, seed something that we'll get to in a couple of years.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful place. And the fact that I have such a robust audience, and you know, if anyone is watching, you know, go to the Kickstarter page, you can see previews pages of all the different stories, and the art's incredible. I work with some amazing artists. Connor Hughes, who I work with on White Ash, did 2 stories for this. And Connor is someone who is making a huge name for himself in comics right now. I can't tell you what he's going to be doing covers for, but he's got a big series of covers that will be coming out for a book that you will see in the direct market. He's just an incredible artist. Romina Mornelli, who I work with on the Glarian miniseries, she's also incredible. She did one of the 3 covers that we have for the book. And it's a fierce cover. It's a who's who of just amazing artists that I'm lucky enough to collaborate with. And, check those out. And I think you'll want to pick up the book.
Oh, absolutely. Gang, I'm telling you, this is a series you want to hop into. And if you're backing a Kickstarter, like back it on the first couple of days, you're going to get the early bird discount. Like, don't be a dummy like me who follows these creators, who gets the emails, who knows, and then is like, oh, cool. Like, yeah, I'm going to get this book. Oh, cool. Nope. I waited and now I'm still. Get those early bird
discounts. Our Kickstarters in particular, you have to sort of get in there early.
Yeah.
We had 10 pages of original art for this one, for one of the stories. Yeah, they were gone in, it was under 2 hours. And those were big pledge tiers. They just shot out the door. Our limited rewards go fairly quickly. I try to put out as many as I can, but there's only so many pages, right? Yeah. And we have a very passionate fan base. So, you know, at 9 a.m., 9:01, you know, there's already 50 backers in the project. People just going bing, 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 bing. But we usually have early bird specials for the first 2 days.
Yep.
I always try to make sure there's tiers for readers. There are catch-up tiers where you can get everything that we've put out at discounted prices. And even at standard prices, it's not, I think there's a pledge tier that's roughly $70, which includes this hardcover. It includes, the trade paperback version. And then, but it's in total, it's over 400 pages of comics that you get, print comics. So, I mean, again, Kickstarter prices, people like, oh my God, this is actually a pretty good deal.
Yeah. And I mean, you're not going crazy too with the pricing, as you know, someone who's backed Kickstarters enough that I feel like I can gauge it enough to go like, okay, this is overpriced for a Kickstarter or whatnot from what I've gotten from other creators. And it's interesting though, too, is backing Kickstarters that you have some like reward tiers. But you said it earlier, and I think that it shows just true on your campaign. You don't have an overabsorbent amount of tiers. It's kind of, you can get your comics and you can get a couple different variants, and we might throw in like some pages and stuff like that. And I think that's a testament to your focus in on, you're putting out a good story.
Yeah. Like, and that's what I want to focus on primarily. You know, I mean, it's tempting to put out the 25 covers and have no one wearing anything on, you know, 20 of them. It's like if I was doing that, I'd probably be making a lot more money, but selling fewer copies. Like that's the thing. And I know, you know, people always focus on what's the dollar amount. Yeah. For me, it's about backers. And as long as I'm growing that fan base, it's, you know, and that's what I want. I want the readers. I want people who like the story, who want the universe. I want people to keep coming back and, you know, spreading the word of what we do, because we're making good books.
Yeah. And you are, and I've been a fan since I talked to you 2 years ago about White Ash, and, you know, we've spent a lot of time now, you know, building up. I'm going to do a disservice to my listeners and not ask, like, are we going to get some more of the main modern, you know, current White Ash story here soon? Or are we still focusing more on the parts of the prequel stuff?
So like the last one we did was last year was White Ash DE, which was like episode 6 and 7.
Yeah.
Here is like the one sort of mistake I've made in the last couple of years. It was, I had this other series that I wanted to do called The Game. And that's also that you can pick up as part of like one of the pledges on the campaign. And this was roughly around the time when we had just done the first hardcover. And I'm talking with Connor. I'm like, who do you think would be a great artist? And he's like, well, I'd like to do it. And I'm thinking, well, that might make sense because we could bring over the White Ash fan base to have Connor do it. And like at the time, he was cranking through pages. And I love him. Like he is one of my favorite people in the world. He's an incredible collaborator. So I was like, yes. This makes sense. And then I think it was like a week after that, they found out they were having their first kid. And, you know, like, and for there, like, you know, go forward like 3 years later, you know, he has got two daughters. And that changes the amount of time that you have to do things. So the story progress has been a little slowed down because he's also drawing the game, you know, going back and forth. So the order for Kickstarters for this year is right now we're doing you know this Galarian hardcover, this collection. The next big Kickstarter will be White Ash 8. Then we will probably do issue 3 and 4 of the Galarian miniseries, then the game 5 and 6. The 4 and 5, which will wrap up the first arc of the game. So that's what I'm hoping for the rest of this year. And then at the beginning of 2024, we'll be launching a Kickstarter for White Ash 9, which will be like an 80-page issue, which will wrap up the second arc of White Ash. So like that's kind of the plan right now, is to wrap that up there. And then going forward, Connor and I will have a conversation about whether he's going to go back and forth between the game and, you know, and White Ash, or maybe he's just going to stick on White Ash. We'll see. But I wanted him to get through the first arc of the game, because just like when we're talking with Spines, I think it's important that you don't change the art style too much going back and forth when you're trying to get people into a series. And it's ideally you at least have an artist do the entire arc of something. And he's going to do the first arc of the game. Again, we'll discuss it from there. He's my co-creator on that. So it's a different conversation than if I was just like, no, you do this and do this. Yeah. You know, we'll figure it out.
Yeah. And speaking of Spines, gang, Charlie and I backstage were talking about how I love that you have, when I was back in the Galarian Kickstarter, it matches the same spine of the White Ash hardcover. And as a collector, I love it, because as you can see from my shelf, it goes high, low, all around. And so I love the uniformity of that.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's, I think all of us who are collectors, we want things to work together, right? Yeah. And I mean, like, what's like the Vertigo where they changed the numbering like somewhere through? I've seen that like picture online, and it drives me crazy too. So I said, Connor, design something that's slightly different, but will line up very nicely on the shelf. And so like, if you watch our video, you can actually see one melt into the other. So you can see that they will line up perfectly.
Nice. Well, Charlie, I know backstage, I was like, oh, we'll keep this at half an hour, like thinking that that was even possible with me and you talking about comics and indies.
I'm, you know, it just comes out. I think it's the beard. It brings it out in me. And then you just catch all the nuggets there.
Nice. It's so great. It catches. Yes, this is the great food catcher and the comic knowledge catcher.
That's right.
So you kind of teased already about what you're working on, and what you got coming out this year. Is there anything that we haven't gotten to touch base on that you'd like? I'd love to just hit on this real quick before we wrap up.
No, I mean, like, I think for me right now, you know, there's nothing else that I can announce today. We will see. But, you know, if I've got something good to announce or to talk about, I'd be happy to come on and tell you about it.
Yeah.
You know, I just think that if you love comics, and I think we all do who watch shows like this, it's a difficult time for retailers and creators right now. And everyone's trying to navigate what the new normal is going to be. So if you're a reader who's watching this channel, have patience and know that creators are trying, that publishers are trying, but that the numbers are like going down in the direct market. So everyone's trying to figure out a new paradigm that makes sense financially. Yeah. And so that may cause some delays. It may cause some early cancellations, but know that creators want to keep putting out great content. And so we're all going to find a way to do that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, to echo that, I would just encourage, you know, my listeners of follow the creators that you like on socials and things like that. See what they're doing. Because the good creators are really good at communicating too with their fan base and allowing this discourse of like, hey, this is where we're at, you know, and that's why I see with successful Kickstarters too, of having that dialogue. I've had Kickstarters that I've backed that I haven't seen a reward for almost a year and a half now. And I'm now just getting one and I'm okay with it because I've had a great, it's been a solid communication. Like, here's where we're at with this. Here's where we're at with this and that. So I think both ways, if you can just keep the dialogue of communication open, man, it'll be a lot better.
It's so important. I mean, because then you have faith that you're going to get this thing.
Yeah.
Right. And that you don't, it's not just out in the ether. The person's like, hey, we got it in from the printer in China, but they put the cover on backwards. So now we're sending it back. Sorry, it's going to be another 6 months before this whole process resolves. But here's a picture of it. And you can see none of us want this thing like this, right? You know, these things happen.
Yep. And I think that's what I just, you know, encourage is, you know, just to go out and support your creators, figure out, you know, what you like and who you want to, you know, follow along with what they're doing and just enjoy the comics that you're getting.
Yeah. If they have a Patreon, give them $3 a month.
Yep.
Find that community because some of them have really good content. We'll have good dialogue with you. That's how you can get to know any of the creators. Just reach out.
Yep. Absolutely. Charlie, it's a blast to talk with you about comics and we talk on Discords and you know, on social all the time, but like just to get to have a video conversation with you is always a delight. So thank you so much.
Well, and I think we scheduled the next one is going to be for your 302nd episode, right?
I hope so. Yeah. So, cause we had you on for my second interview ever. When we recorded this will be the 102nd.
Oh, 100th. So the 202nd.
The 202nd. Yes. But I mean, if you got some stuff that we need to talk about earlier, we can do that. Cause another 100 episodes. I don't know if I want to wait that long to talk with you. So.
Well, anytime. I love being on.
Well, gang, go support. The Kickstarter link is in the description of this video, or if you're listening on the podcast online, click the description video. You'll find the link. Go check out what Charlie's working on. Game. We didn't even talk about the game. We didn't even talk about your other books and stuff much because it's just been so long since I've gotten to talk about the world of White Ash. I had to. So
yeah, I'll come back.
Yeah, we'll be back. So, gang, though, with that being said, hopefully you can find some time to curl up, grab a book, and nerd out. Peace.